Thanks so much, Chris, for having me here. Basically, the reason that we were talking about this, Chris and I, is so many people are always asking what's happening in the market. It's something that we're always talking to our consultants and our technical professionals about. It's something that all of your managers and directors and VPs are always asking about, because every day, day in, day out, that's what my job is. I leave all of the what I would call hard work to you guys in terms of actually being able to put things in place and make all of our websites work and all of that sort of stuff. But day in, day out, I'm involved in hiring, and I'm looking at hiring trends, and I'm looking at what our clients and our managers are really targeting. So that's why we thought it would be best to look at a topic that's going to address what the outlook is for 2012. My approach tonight is going to be very interactive, so at any point, if you have any questions, comments that you want to shout out, let me know. We can stop on the spot and address those as we go along. So I'm really just going to look at what we're currently facing from employment, what are some of the top skills, and then how to look at some job hunting skills and so on and so forth. I don't know if everyone in the room has a different agenda, if everyone is currently happily employed and looking at you know, what's happening in the market, or if there's people right now in transition, but we can delve deeper as we move along. And not to spend too much time on myself, I've been with Tech Systems for a little over 5 years now, in the market for that long as well. A lot of my clients are actually focused in the Markham-Richmond Hill area. Tech Systems, we span across the GTA and right out to Waterloo, and then right out to Oshawa on the east side. So we have quite a depth, and we've also been around for about 28 years, so this is a big focus of ours, is to really be engaged in terms of what's happening in the market to be able to address these topics of interest for you guys. So here we go. So one of the startling statistics that comes across here is Stats Canada has recently reported a 7.5% unemployment in general. And if you look at IT, you're a fraction of that. Does that surprise anyone right now?
Not at all.
No? Okay, I get a lot of shocked response here, actually. The great news is you guys really are in an excellent position to be able to look at what you're really looking for in the market and to be able to turn around and have an upper hand with your employment at this point in time. Employers are really looking at how to build value propositions to be able to retain good people like yourselves, and they're really building different value propositions to attract people like yourselves. And this rate hasn't really changed much. Anything under 4% is considered a shortage. And during the height of our recession, we just hit that 4% IT unemployment. So we've continually seen this number drop since the recession, and even just prior to it, it was actually virtually zero, because by the time you consider frictional unemployment, things like you know, maternity leave or sick leave or disability or whatnot, it was virtually zero at that point in time. So this is just a quick market sample of what we're looking at in terms of the number of workers. Canada does a census every 5 years, so I'd be interested to see after the 2011 census results what these numbers are going to be. But just to give you guys an idea of what the numbers are that we're looking at right now. And software developers really are taking a big chunk of that population. And truth be told, on my side of the fence, I'd love to see that number grow. Continue to talk to your relatives, your nieces, nephews, brothers, sisters, cousins, because what we're finding right now is there isn't the influx into IT as there used to be. Fewer people are going into education and university into IT for whatever reason. I don't know if there's any sort of mixed messaging happening at universities, but we're just not seeing the number of people entering the workforce. And in fact, now we're approaching that baby boomer exiting the workforce. So it's really given IT a shakeup at this point in time, and there's more and more demand for that higher skill set. So as I said, keep telling your friends and family where to go, right? So the outlook for 2012 continues to be very positive. There's always the question of, do I go into contracting or do I go full-time permanent? And more companies are looking at increasing with contingent workforce because they're able to scale up, scale down, depending on what the projects that they're working on. However, that being said, there's still a number of employers looking to increase headcount, and a number of them plan to do so by 5%, which is pretty significant. There's a lot of companies right now in the GTA that have large-scale initiatives. There's been acquisitions. They're more looking at innovation type projects versus just keeping the lights on, which is what they've been doing over the last few years. So now you're getting into the meat. You're looking at upgrades. You know, we're talking about Windows 8 right now. However, Windows 7 is just being integrated right now. So there's continuing to be that evolvement of technology that's really spurring the increase to help. The other thing that's happened over the years is CIOs are getting more integrated within the business, and so they're buying in a little bit more business and IT to be able to marry that relationship better. And what that is able to do is allow people to understand what it is IT does and seeing continuous value there. And still, the number one concern of CIOs, and this has been across surveys consistently for the last 4 or 5 years, is how to attract and how do I retain the top IT talent. So it is at the forefront of what's on their minds when they go to sleep at night and when they wake up in the morning. So this slide should be very exciting for every single person in the room right now, because you guys are at the top of everyone's priority list. Mobile application, is anyone involved in mobile application right now? Development, yeah? Any companies starting to talk about it and, hey, how do I transition my current staff to do some of this mobile application development? That's number one. Android has an edge over iPhone developers, but we've seen an increase in demand for that from 129 to 190%. And then is the majority of the people in the room, are we .NET developers or... This, I would assume that's a very silly question, but you know what? I have seen weirder things. So, and within this is, and I think Gladstone can allude to it a little bit later, but anyone with any particular Microsoft out-of-the-box skills, so your SharePoint or your BizTalk, your Dynamics, those are in high demand right now because there's fewer number of people who have that type of skill. So anyone who's currently working full-time at their companies can, you know, even talk to some of their managers and have an understanding of what the divide is there and how many people are doing that type of development. See if you can't get your hands in on any sort of that development would be a good recommendation. Other than that, there's still a focus to convert legacy applications. A lot of companies are using Java to be able to do that because they're seeing it more as an open source and can... you know, do the multi-platform there. But that being said, we've seen a steady increase in .NET over the past few years, and it's rivaling Java. I've told a lot of people it's far more in demand currently than Java is. So that being said, it's your .NET, your SharePoint, your BizTalk, doing the migrations and getting up to the new and up-to-date versions that Microsoft has available. And then lastly in this area is the user experience designers. And this is going back to that mobile application and that so many of those applications are customer facing and they need to be customized to be able to attract clientele and for that clientele to be able to turn around and do that work themselves. So that's where we're looking at there. And just, I don't know if you guys have any interest in terms of what is happening in the outside of your area of expertise. So these, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but these are where else we're going. So you can be very knowledgeable to help any of your friends in the industry in terms of where they might stand with some of the other top skill sets. But these are continuing to be the ones in high demand. Security is ranking number 2. It continues to be a focus for companies for obvious reasons, and cloud computing is having a big impact on that. It's definitely spurring the need for added infrastructure professionals and having to continue to maintain that secure environment. And then data warehousing and business intelligence, for obvious reasons, you've got your big companies that are continuing to push hey, if you can understand how to mine that data, then you're going to be that much more profitable. So that push from those integrators is continuing to spur this movement. And truth be told, you're seeing a lot of return on your investment from this type of area. So that's why it continues to be a focus for CIOs. And it's looking at really, hey, how can I, you know, look at cost-saving measures? How can I better enable business decisions and whatnot? That hasn't changed. This skill set hasn't changed as far as its demand in the last 2-3 years. And then no surprise is the networking. Companies are continuing to save room and performing their virtualization and focusing on what their cloud computing is going to be able to do for them, as well as the Windows 7 migration that companies are continuing to do. That's still in the works for a number of them, even though Windows 8 is upon us already. So that's something that's going to continue to spur in this area. And then number 5 is still this combination of project management and business systems analyst. You're seeing that combination of BA and SA, systems analyst and business analyst, being combined more and more. Companies are looking at avenues that they can do some cost-cutting measures, and that's why they're looking for someone who's got more of that technology-focused and business acumen. Mind you, they're demanding business acumen more and more from every type of skill set that they have on staff, but more and more in this area. So someone who can actually deliver the project versus just oversee it is really the focus in this area. And then lastly, with all of the upgrades, is the infrastructure professional. So this is your technical support, people who can get brought up to speed on what the current platforms are and support those, especially for supporting for mobile operating systems. I don't know if anyone really wants to answer this at this point in time, but is anyone looking at making a job transition, or is anyone currently in the market right now and interviewing and struggling to understand what hiring managers are looking for? A little bit? Yeah? Okay. The big focus has gotten away just from 100% technical aptitude. Companies are demanding more and more than what they used to. So when you're going into an organization, your soft skills and your ability to fit into the team and your ability to fit into their culture is paramount. They're looking for that consummate professional that can really deliver in multiple avenues and help make a difference on the team. And the one that I have here in the middle here, someone who understands their business, is continuing to be more and more important as IT and business are more and more integrated. So someone who can learn what the telecommunications industry is facing, what the trends there that is facing, someone who can go into, you know, human resources and understand what the demands are there, all in the various industries. It's no longer becoming as cross-functional, and each company is demanding that little bit more of knowledge. So my only recommendation in that area is, when you are looking at different transitions for positions and whatnot, is just to do your homework in that industry. There's different ways to go onto a company website, look at the career and customer and what is it? There's a spot on the website where you go and investors, and you can pull up their webpage and their white papers and look at what some of the focuses for that company is for the year, and you can understand what it is that they're really breaking down there. Okay, soft skills, and this is going to vary depending on what the company is looking for. If someone is looking to hire someone on full time, they're wanting someone that can fit into their team. So when we say soft skills, we're combining communication from an ability to understand and communicate with the team, someone who's coachable, someone who can work well with different levels in the team, someone who can interact with the business units as well as management. It's not, hey, you have to look and act and feel this way, but it's more, hey, can you relate to what's happening in our environment, and can you bring yourself and present yourself as a professional? That's being demanded more and more, whereas before it was, hey, can you do the job technically? Good, because I can't, so go do it, right? That's more what they're focusing on right now, is someone who can have a number of those types of attributes and traits. And really, there's been some studies done sort of midsection here. 89% of quote-unquote poor or misjudged or bad hires are actually more focused on attitude. It's not focused on technical aptitude. So that's why it was so important to bring up the soft skills and the coachability and the ability to fit into a culture. And these are ranked, the four of them, in terms of someone wasn't coachable, I couldn't train them, I couldn't mold them into my team. They didn't have the ability to understand what my problems were from a business standpoint. They weren't motivated, they didn't take the initiative, or they just weren't the right temperament for the team. And you can read into that one as you wish. But. You know what, you're hitting the nail right on the head, to be honest. And that's part of the reason why new grads are having trouble, because there's an elite pool, for instance, that every employer is looking at, because those are your top 5%, and everyone's is you know, going after that top 5% because they have set the bar very high. You guys have done an excellent job of raising the bar there, right? So you're always having to chase after. I always hear technical professionals saying, hey, I'm constantly having to study at night to keep myself up to date. So that's a concern, right? Hey, how do I keep myself up to date to be able to keep up with all the technology changes? And yet you want me to be a team player and you want me to do this, you want me to do that? I'm just telling you what it is. It's hard, but it's what we're facing right now. And that's shifted. You know, you look at the tech boom in Silicon Valley years ago, they took, you know, people who were cutting the grass and cleaning your toilets and trained them how to be technical wizards, and that was enough to suffice back then. They're just demanding more now. I think it's part of what our society is moving towards. It's our job from an employment standpoint, like as a recruitment firm and an IT services firm, this is one of the areas that we're constantly educating employers on, in terms of, hey, we're at a 2.5% IT unemployment, we're all vying for the same talent, so you might have to give and take a little bit, which is why technical aptitude has actually slid a little bit, because they feel they can train that, they feel they can't train the soft skills. Sure. And I think some employers are going to define it differently than others. But essentially what they're looking at is someone who can comprehend what their responsibilities are when they're coming into work every day, and someone who can comprehend how to interact with a team. So someone who has that, I would almost call it emotional aptitude, someone who can stay even keeled throughout the day and work strongly as a part of the team. I think I should have done one slide with just like giant words saying network, because if you're really looking for a job, this is what you do. Every day what you're doing, you're essentially performing your role, but you're also networking. Coming to the user group tonight, you're networking, you're talking to colleagues around you, you're finding out where they're working. Half the time, 9 times out of 10, you'll talk to someone on the other side of the room that you don't know, but there's a mutual connection between the two of you. Oh, I worked with that person at this company or whatnot, right? I think there's going to be some people in the room that don't fall under this statistic, but the average length of assignment for a full-time employee in IT is 26 months, so just over 2 years. So you're constantly moving around and looking for different opportunities. You'll even see some of your managers moving around who are at companies that maybe you're interested in down the road. So I can't emphasize that enough. And you're actually 54 times more likely to be hired through a referral than if you apply on a job posting. Every single job I've ever had was through a referral. I actually don't even know how to post my resume. I shouldn't tell you guys that. And a lot of times you see people returning to work with their former managers. So if something happens at one of your places of employment, always remember that you never know when you're going to see that person again. You never know where they're going to end up or how they might be able to help you get into the company of your choice. So that's also a really big one. And then I've got a third bullet in here, and recruitment firms. Show of hands, how many people have had an experience working with a recruitment firm? Okay, so we should come to recruit or networking meetings more often. IT is one of the more common professions that require a recruitment service to be able to facilitate the workforce management and human capital management. It's because of the nature of the business, you've got human resources who are recruiting for all sorts of skill sets, and IT being so specific, they almost will shy away from what the technical skill sets required are, which is why they turn around and engage recruitment firms more frequently. There's various types of firms. There's people who only deal in full-time permanent placements. There's firms who deal in contingent workforce planning. So choose your right one. We can get into that in a little bit later on, actually, in terms of how to really network and use a recruitment firm, even if you never are placed through one. They're excellent avenues to be able to network with and to be able to understand what the job market is like. I think one big one that Chris wanted me to talk about, and one that I'm a firm believer in, is LinkedIn. Again, show of hands, who uses LinkedIn, who's got a profile, who loves it, can't stop checking it. Yeah, exactly. I personally don't even have a Facebook account, and I started in that generation when it came out, but I'm a firm believer in LinkedIn, and it's one that I've always used. And you're going to get people who really, truly use it as a professional network. You almost think of it as no matter if you're working and if you're looking, you constantly have a resume up and your employer never knows that you're looking. Whereas if you're turning around and posting your resume on the job boards, there's services in place right now that will actually look online to see if you are posted while working for a company. Not to deter you if that's an avenue that you've found success in. I know personally our company, we don't spend a lot of time on there because there's only, you know, out of the whole room here, maybe two people would be on the job boards. That's the percentage that's becoming more and more common. You're only seeing 18% of the IT workforce posted on the job boards. Whereas when you've got LinkedIn, you constantly have a resume of all of your experience, your skills, your goals, your interests. And it's certainly become an excellent tool that recruitment uses. We're always looking for various connections on LinkedIn, it's just a very good place to have a profile of yourself up there. You can follow a company, so you can get particular updates on that. You can just do, as I mentioned here, that generic job search. You can use that suitcase to let employers know that you're looking, and you can continue to follow into your connections that you have. So continue to build those different connections on LinkedIn so that you can utilize those if you're job hunting and whatnot. And it's also a great opportunity and tool to be able to ask any questions that you might have too. If it's not job hunting but you're looking to have any particular questions answered, then it's an excellent avenue to go through there as well. And the other avenue here is Twitter, actually. A lot of companies are putting their postings on Twitter. I don't know if anyone has ever followed that way to do their job hunt. Yeah? Any success? Yeah. It's incredible. Companies are focusing more and more on social media, anything mobile to be able to get that. They're essentially looking that people will be bringing their own tablets to work more and more, and the PC is, you know, might not play as big a factor in it anymore. So continue to network and continue to use these social media sites to look at various different positions available. So as I said, some of the other avenues, looking into recruiting firms, networking groups where we are right now, and Chris mentioned a number of ones in the city, so if you're not able to get out to this one, or if there's a topic at another one that you're looking at expanding your network on, then be able to attend those as well. Leverage who your current contacts are. I've often had several of my clients classify the GTA as a shop. It's an IT shop. As much as there's 146,000 IT workers here, it's small. You're always going to run into someone, so be able to maintain those relationships and be able to maintain that integrity while you're on site, because again, you never know when you're going to run into that person again. And the one here I've got on is cold calling into companies. This was a little bit more a practice people were doing during the recession when they were coming up at the end of their contract and they're very nervous about being employed on a continuous basis. So they were starting to look at what the job opportunities were and physically cold calling into the company. Now, when you're utilizing LinkedIn effectively, you probably won't have to do that because you can turn around and reach out to someone that you already know and can maybe warm up that call a little bit more for you. So that's a little bit more of an active approach, if you will, to be able to get into that. Okay. So I mentioned I'd get into this briefly, you know, only a few of you had shown your hands up as far as engaging in a recruitment firm. When you are looking at this avenue to be able to explore different opportunities, you want to make sure that you're getting a partnership from them. So looking for someone who's going to communicate with you, help you in terms of updating you about what the market is, who is hiring, what to expect when you're going to get on board with an organization, what you can get out of different companies, someone who's going to help grow your career. That's the type of partnership you look for in a recruiting firm, and I know that's the type of partnership Tech Systems values with people. You know, we'll look at doing some interview preparation for you so you're not going in blind to any opportunity that you have. Look for someone who can help you with career growth. For instance, if you're in a development position and you want to move into an architect or a team lead, how can that recruitment firm help you get to your path? That's another avenue that you want to be able to explore, because there are ones out there that they might not have your best interests at heart. So I always encourage people, and I do the same on a company side, encourage a partnership from your organization, because that's what we're here for. There's also various training opportunities you can engage in. So if there's any updated courses that they have available for you that you want to take, that's another avenue that they should be providing. And if you're ever looking at any cross-border opportunities or coast-to-coast Canada, I know we all like Pickering and Markham and Richmond Hill, although I'm pretty sure not many people are focused solely in Pickering. They might be venturing more into the GTA for your, you know, your daytime opportunities. And just look for someone who's personable and has some excellent integrity and a strong history in the industry. That's really what you should be expecting from firms, and if you're not getting that, then I would encourage you to shop around. Essentially, recruiting firms have a dual responsibility. One is to be able to service companies, to be able to find them exactly what they are looking for, but to also challenge them as a business partner to ensure that they're getting the right people. And then two, we have a responsibility to be able to help people with their career growth. So one of those avenues, and that's an excellent question, we get that a lot. There's not really a discrepancy. If someone has the right experience and they've come from the type of industries that companies are looking for, we haven't really come across a problem. Very seldomly can recruiting firms sponsor someone to come to Canada. Like, I know you're not getting into that, but so just to address that quickly. I would say oftentimes we end up placing someone who doesn't have Canadian experience, but it's all going to depend on what their offshore experience is too. They would beat out someone who doesn't have the same level of Canadian experience for sure. So you're seeing 2012, the economy is getting stronger in Canada in particular. You know, you're looking at the markets that are continuing to improve. So as I alluded to earlier, you haven't seen that decrease in IT. And in fact, they're looking at more innovative projects versus just ones that are maintaining and support. So that's increasing the demand for professionals, such as yourselves, to be able to come in and help with those projects. So we're continuing to see an uptick. All I will ever advise is it never hurts. A certification or whatnot, it never hurts. It's the same in technology. It never hurts to increase any sort of Microsoft certifications because it gives you that sometimes that extra added leg up, whereas you get some managers that say, hey, there's not much difference, so I just want someone who can best fit into my environment and best complete the job. There are some companies still out there that require a university degree. They're fewer in numbers than the ones that don't require it. A lot of people look at what hands-on experience do you have. University these days is really giving an employer an indication that you can complete something, that you can go ahead and look at a 3 or a 4 year degree and execute on it. College gives a little bit more of a hands-on approach to taking on the job. So it's going to depend on what avenue you want to go into, where there will be some companies that will require that university. But you can maneuver around it. There's CIOs out there who don't have a university degree. So it's really going to depend on if there's a certain company out there that you really want to look at, where you'd have to look at going back that way. Training opportunities is a big one. Moving people into higher visibility projects, looking at moving people into projects that might be an upgrade in their technology. If especially in development, I'm seeing a lot of that increase into mobile development. One experiment that Google did a little bit ago was they had an afternoon where they put all of the project work aside and they just came up with different development ideas. So some companies are looking at doing that to provide a little bit more freedom in a day-to-day environment versus that regimented come in, perform your work, and get out. So those are two big ones. There's a war with the work from home. A lot of companies are going that way, whereas a lot of companies want to have people in the workforce, but that's being demanded actually more from leadership, where when they're looking for roles, they're actually wanting to work from home. So you're seeing some companies implement that as an added value to attract people. So those are, and then four is pay. Those are probably the four major ones. So that if they can get different people involved in that sort of space, then that's where they're really seeing some value, where they can set themselves apart. If you're switching every, 6-8 months, and it's always to a permanent position where you're on their payroll, you're full-time staff, that's not as desirable to an employer, because then they're not seeing someone who is either, maybe they're not gelling well in an environment, or maybe they're bored, or whatever the reason is. That's not as desirable. However, if you're contracting, that's a different story, because oftentimes your projects literally are that short. So employers are looking to see that commitment that you can make to an organization. And there's pros and cons. Like I said, I know there's people in the room who have been at the organization for 8-9 years, and they're still seeing tremendous value and would still be able to go to another organization because their company is kept up to date technologies. So it's more of, I always say full-time roles are more of that marriage. You have to get, each person has to get an equal amount from the other person. So the employer has to get what they need out of the employee, but vice versa. You need to make sure that you're getting what you require out of your organization. When we're looking at resumes, to be honest, this mobile development is really hitting more this year than it has. We've only seen a handful of companies hiring to this point for mobile application. So my advice is to put a lot of information on about your experience within mobile development, because there's so few people out there. So you want to ensure that you're setting yourself apart from people who don't have that particular experience. A common frustration, though, of employers and of hiring managers, though, is people who embellish on resumes and don't actually have that skill. There's so much information to be added onto a technology profile, because you essentially have two audiences looking at your resume. You have someone who's technical and you have someone who's non-technical. So that non-technical person is looking for buzzwords. They're looking for, do you have C#? Do you have SQL Server 2008? Do you have BizTalk? Whereas the technical person can read it between the lines if you don't have as much information on there. It's almost counterintuitive, because you don't want to brag, and yet your resume is a point to brag. You probably learned that in school. because that's what it used to be, but we're not getting the amount of information on two pages anymore. Plus, going back to the point of the average assignment is 26 months. How are you going to put that much information on two pages if, say, you've been working for 15 years and, oh no, I've just set myself up for a math question right now, but you know what, like say you've been at five places, you can't just put one or two lines per opportunity, right? On average, per open position, hiring managers are seeing anywhere from 30 to 60 resumes.
A day?
Per position. So some of my clients, if they're hiring for a senior .NET developer, they're going to have in their hands anywhere from 30 to 60 resumes. And that's through any type of filtration that HR has done, any recruitment firms that they're working with. So the way that you can set yourself apart, and I might deviate here a little bit, but Tech Systems has different tools set up to set you apart. We've got screening assessments. We have that communication to be able to talk to them about you. And then you're at the top of their list. For yourself, writing a resume, all you can do is keep it concise and have the detail in terms of what you're looking for and what you're wanting. If you've used SharePoint 2010, that would need to be on your resume because there's fewer number of people who have used that.